So I'm going to be in conversation with Bruce Finlay. Bruce, the owner of Bruce's Record Shops, founder of the Zoom record label, and the man who discovered and managed Simple Minds. So I asked him for a piece of vinyl for our vinyl collective collection. But first, I quizzed him all about Bruce's Records, that iconic store that he managed and ran, all the stores that he ran back in the day, and discovered that he's still got a head full of catalogue numbers. And I'm not joking.
Yeah, my favourite catalogue number was ILPS 9111, which is an easy one to remember. The Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson. But the thing about catalogue numbers is you had to remember them when you worked in a record shop. It was like working in a record shop's a wee bit like being a librarian. And we filed records by catalogue numbers, and the catalogue numbers were picked by the record companies, of course, and each company had their own prefix. PMC or PCS, for example, was Parlophone, the Beatles, and then a number following, you know. There are Zillow's, Sensible Records, Can't Stand My Baby, Fab One. I mean, you can have fun with catalogue numbers. You know?
Absolutely. So, of course, your experience with regards to vinyl, it wasn't just you were a fan and you listened to it at home.
Yes.
You sold and you provided vinyl for so many people in Edinburgh. And Dundee, you had shops, didn't you?
Glasgow.
Glasgow as well.
Falkirk, so, Stirling, Perth, Kirkcaldy.
So how many shops did you have at its peak?
14, I think.
Wow.
We had three in Edinburgh at one time, three in Glasgow.
And it wasn't just a record store. I mean, not only would you go there to buy records, you could go there and you could meet the bands.
Yes. I mean, we were a record store. I mean, Virgin and people like that began to sell T-shirts and things. I don't know what the hell that had to do with records, but we would sell stylus needles, you know, little stylus, and we'd sell cleaners. And we made a point of trying to get artists in to do signings. And so we had amazing artists, Tom Petty, the Ramones, Clash, Blondie, you know, it, all sorts of...
How did that come about? How did you actually get them in? Was this all to do with the record companies?
Well,
or?
To begin with, the very first PA we had in Edinburgh, we had two, the Edinburgh City Police Pipe Band.
Right.
Which I thought was quite cool to open this underground, inverted commas, record shop. But the first actual kind of PA, personal appearance, was the Moody Blues, who were huge, 1969. So we had the Moody Blues, and then after that... It was mostly new artists. I mean, people like The Tourists, you know, Annie and Dave, which became Eurythmics, you know. Bands on the way up, Ian Dury and the Blockheads, The Police.
But it was all, for me, the whole experience of record store. It was, you know, people say to you, what are you doing the weekend? And I'm going, oh, I'm going to town to buy records. And that's what you did. You know, you went into town and you spent the whole day perusing all the record stores in town.
Yeah.
And you'd often go right back to the first store that you nipped in bought the album that you didn't. And then you'd go all the way home. And it was the whole experience of buying vinyl, wasn't it?
You know, we were deadly serious about it. It wasn't just a job. But coming to the record shop was like a club almost. People would come in, customers would, if it was quietish, like on a Saturday morning before it got busy, and you could talk to customers or during the week. And we'd talk about records, we'd talk about new releases. Artists would sometimes come in and meet. It's how I met so many new bands. And what decided me to start a record label, actually, was the amount of bands that came in.
So is this how it all came about with Simple Minds?
Absolutely, yeah.
So what happened? How
did
that
happen?
I mean,
to be honest, we were a hot record shop. We were well known and I felt well respected as retailers. And that particular Island Records were my favourite label. And I recommended so many different people to them, the Vikings, who became the Average White Band, for example. And I think just different people. And they never took me seriously because of punk. It wasn't just CBS signing the Clash. It was Jake Riviera signing the Damned. So I was buying records for the shop, of course. And Stiff totally turned me on, Stiff Records. And I went and saw Jake in London and was buying, I can't remember what the record was, I was picking them up from him to drive back in my car so that I had the singles in stock the next morning, because it was going to take a week to get them otherwise, and I wanted to be first always, you know. I said, the thing is, I was going to start a label a couple of years ago, but Island, they wouldn't back me. And I said, well, you don't need a lot of money, it costs a few hundred quid to make a record, and you know, people, there's a network of little shops around the country, so I thought, I'm going to start a label, and I did.
And so did this get you to Simple Minds once you got running?
I made two or three records independently.
Yeah.
I recognised the door would get closed. The majors would catch up. The indies were ahead of the game. But the majors were, what's happening? What's going on here? Yeah. You know, and they were like oil tankers. It took them a while to turn around. But once they got turned around, you couldn't stop them. And they were going to crush the little independents. So I went out and got a licence deal with Arista, a big label who had the Bay City Rollers, for example. And Iggy Pop and Patti Smith, Lou Reed at the time. Simple Minds came to see me. They'd just formed. And I liked Jim. Jim was very serious back then. He was young. He was 18, 19. Little bit of eyeliner, mm-hmm. you know, painfully serious, not like your typical Ouija at all.
No chat, no banter.
Oh, no, none of that. But I liked him. He was intelligent, you know, he knew what he was after. He only came to me for advice. He was told, look, you should go and speak to Bruce Finlay. He's helpful. He'll advise you, if nothing else, you know. He wasn't looking for management. He wasn't looking for me to sign them or anything, just to maybe give him my words of wisdom. And I had the shops, of course. And that was the beginning of a love affair, if you like. I fell in love with them, and I hung out with them for the next few months, finally managing to sign them to Zoom Records, licensed through Arista, who were useless. And we fell out with them. We made three albums in 2 years, great albums, particularly the second and third one, but we didn't have the breakthrough. But I managed to get them off that deal, and we signed to Virgin. And Love Song was a minor hit in Canada, fun enough, our first top 20 anywhere. And we managed to tour the world. We toured America, Canada, and Australia, and back to Britain again. And
It's exciting. It's fascinating to hear how, you know, there you were from someone who had his business of selling records.
Yeah.
You then ended up to making records and making very important records. So if we're going to stick one on the turntable now, right, let's go back to the early days of Simple Minds. You just mentioned Love Song. You know, there could be I Travel Before That,
yeah,
Life in a Day, Chelsea Girl. If we were to play any of those on vinyl right now, which one would you go for?
I think it has to be I Travel.
From Simple Minds, and you were there, Bruce Finlay, my guest on the Vinyl Collective today. Just telling me how that whole story of you managing the band, they went on to obviously achieve massive things, but the resurgence of vinyl, which is in essence what we're talking about, you must be delighted that it's back, and it's back in all its glory, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, Grant. The worst thing that happened to records was the CD. And no disrespect, but megastores, superstores. It's a bit like the superstores that sell food that have killed the little grocer shops, the little butcher shops, the little fishmongers. Mm-hmm. Little stores like mine with snobby guys behind the counter who knew their stuff were crushed by megastores, where essentially you just browsed for records. They were shrunk-wrapped or CDs, which came along a wee bit later, and you went to the checkout and you bought them and you went away.
It's interesting, these big chains came in,
yeah.
did the damage, and now they've gone.
And what we've got back again is Coda and Underground Solution and Mono in Glasgow and I Love Music and little shops, some of whom have been there throughout. They survived. We got crushed. Bruce's ultimately closed. There were shops that survived, one or two, and people said, record shops are dead. Now, two things happened. One, although it's a kind of commercial thing, record store day or record shop day, and people making limited edition vinyl, you know, when did it start? About 7 or 8, 10 years ago, maybe, just as a sort of gimmick. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, it's kind of taken off.
Yeah.
And now you go into these stores and the front shop has the vinyl and the back shop has the CDs. Fantastic.
It's all changed, and we're delighted. So on the Vinyl Collective, we're starting over our short 7-week run to help those who are maybe getting back into the groove of the vinyl again. They've gone out and bought a turntable for themselves or for dad or something like that.
Yeah.
So we want to put together this little guide, a little sort of top 20 albums that you should really have in your collection if you're buying vinyl. Now, you're a man who knows so many artists, so many albums, so many bands. It must be impossible to pick one, but we are going to ask you, Bruce, to pick one album. So if somebody was to come up to you and say, which album should I start my collection with, what would you go for?
Well, I think it's a good question because it's a different question from what is your favourite album.
Yes, very much so.
My favourite album would probably be The Hangman's Beautiful Daughter by Edinburgh's very own, an incredible string band.
Indeed.
But I wouldn't necessarily recommend that to people.
It's an acquired taste, I think.
Yeah. I love it, of course. I would actually suggest one of two albums. It's so hard. I mean, I can think of a dozen. But in fact, I think a great album to start would be The Beatles' Revolver.
In a nutshell, if you can, just explain why.
It's the best album they made, I think. It was them going from being a fabulous pop band, the best pop band we've ever known, which was essentially power pop to kind of psychedelic rock. You know, they were moving into it. It was the album before Sgt. Pepper. It was very advanced. Sound of the album was very advanced. They were using tricks and technology that was very ahead of the time at that time with George Martin. So apart from the fact it had great songs in it, fantastic songs, it was very much of the time. 1966 it came out. I was running a beach bar in Mallorca, and my mum sent it over, and we played it every single day over the speaker. So I have very fond memories of it. And it was very much of its time, although I think it stands up today. And it's the Beatles. So no record collection would be complete without at least one Beatles album in it, and I would start with that one.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think it would be remiss of us to have a top 20 albums without the Beatles in it. So Revolver is your choice. Let's play a track from it. Which one?
Tomorrow Never Knows.
So courtesy of Bruce Finlay, the Beatles and Revolver is now in the Vinyl Collective's collection. That's two in, including my selection of ABC's The Lexicon of Love. And not only did Bruce find it difficult to choose the one Beatles album, he went for the Revolver, then we had to decide, do we go for the mono version or the stereo version? We went for the stereo version, as it turns out. But we thank Bruce Finlay very much for giving us that one. Revolver, the Beatles, a complete absolute no-brainer in any vinyl collection. Bruce Finlay, he's some guy, isn't he? There he was in the 60s, just casually dropping in that he was running a beach bar in Mallorca. And then in the 70s, he was running a number of record shops in Edinburgh, Falkirk, Dundee and the like. And in the 80s, he's casually managing Simple Minds. I mean,